is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. With COVID-19, coronavirus seems to be the news. It is a 24/7 barrage of information coming at all of us. And the key is, as you're hearing officials now are saying as well, be careful where you get your news from. That's really important as well, because there's a lot of bad information out there. And we'll talk about some of that today on Viewpoint This Sunday, friends. Good to have you here on the journey with us here. First story up front I want to talk about is China and this relationship that we have with China. And, you know, there's some really interesting political things going on with our relationships as the United States draws down on the diplomats that are in China. And this has... what we got to look at here is what happens after we get to the other side of this hurdle. What happens with our relationships with China? Because, you know, number one and two economic powers, we've got to work with China on some level here. Let's bring on here Michael Johns joins us on the program. Michael is the national co-founder and leader of the Tea Party movement. He's a former White House speechwriter and a policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation. All right, so U.S. diplomats and their families as well are returning home in large sums here, actually. It's been going on in the last few weeks. It's being called one of the largest peacetime evacuations of U.S. diplomatic personnel in history. And it's the emptying out of American diplomatic outposts. And this is as our relationships with China are becoming chilly at best. I mean, this is not a high point. You know, you got to remember, we've had this trade debacle going on for some time back and forth where the administration has been trying to rework all these trade deals. Now with this COVID-19, there's a lot of talk about calling it the China virus, and why is the administration calling it the China virus? Well, the State Department comes out and says, we have provided clear guidance to U.S. citizens to depart China and take appropriate precautions in other locations affected by this outbreak here. Can we get over this hurdle, Michael? Can we effectively get over this with China once we get to the other side of this pandemic?
I think a lot of it has to do with the Chinese Communist Party, which governs China in such an autocratic ways, interest in cultivating a relationship of honesty and mutual respect and commitment to their word. And the fact that they have not done those things for decades is, you know, sort of become now ingrained in their behavior. I think we have a president in President Trump who, better than any singular president of our lifetimes, and I'm including the president I worked for who was ambassador to China, recognizes the threats, problems, and challenges that we confront in that relationship and is going right at it. And he does, you know, so you can kind of look at it two ways. On the positive is he has developed a very good relationship with President Xi. That's important, hugely important. But underneath it all is still lies malevolent, aggressive behavior on part of the Chinese Communist Party.
Well, they're not happy right now that this pandemic is being blamed, and again, calling it the China virus, which the administration is still doing, but they're not happy with that because the underlying point of all of this is that this has got to have, don't you think this has got to have some major repercussions on China's relationships and their reputation around the world?
It looks like they're putting as much focus onto how they are depicted globally and this sort of information warfare than they are onto the virus itself. And
that's
we
it.
Know that, unfortunately, the statistics that came out of there, I think, are hugely unreliable. And even by the statistics that they've released, it shows it's disproportionately hit China heavier and harder than anyone else. And then most importantly in all of this is the fact, which I think ultimately is going to be addressed by this administration. I don't think now's the time to do it. And I think the administration's really correct in not making this the issue now, but ultimately we got to get around to this, is that ultimately they really fundamentally, I think, misled the World Health Organization about magnitude of the crisis and also about the infection rates
and
how great they were. Yeah. And there's some good reporting out from Financial Times, and I saw the Daily Caller in the U.S. had picked this up as well, that has focused a good amount on Taiwan and mm-hmm. how Taiwan went to the WHO and said, look, these are the problems we're experiencing. And, as recently as mid-January, WHO was saying that this was not a contagious virus. Well, this is the leading global health advocacy and support and informational source really in the world, for the world community at least. And I think that was hugely detrimental and made this in a lot of ways worse than it needed to be.
Well, listen, there's a lot of bad information out there, as I started the broadcast with today and saying to folks. And one of the big stories, Michael, that's floating is the top National Guard general. He refutes the nationwide coronavirus quarantine rumors. So General Joseph Lengel, chief of the National Guard Bureau, he put out a tweet. He said, I hear unfounded rumors about the National Guard troops supporting a nationwide quarantine. Let me be clear, there has been no such discussion. This is, again, where you go with this. Just a lot of news floating out there and a lot of rumors. And there are a lot of stories right now about a nationwide coronavirus quarantine. That would be extreme. I mean, I don't see that happening under almost any condition, do you?
Before that statement, I guess hypothetically, in a worst case scenario, you could have seen a brief institution of that, which I think would have been challenged legally in courts as well. But I think this statement by the NSC and the one that I read that was released on Friday evening is unequivocal and very clear cut that there will be no such national quarantine. So that really is, again, suggestive of misinformation that's being designed really to worsen the paranoia and the overreaction. And the statement itself cites the fact that the text messages and emails about national quarantines are absolutely false and started by those wanting to cause fear and confusion in mm-hmm. our country, which I find very important and interesting. They would raise that because I think that really suggests that there are some malevolent forces at play here domestically or more probably globally.
Yeah, that are trying to wreak havoc. In fact, the U.S. defense officials warned that they're calling it foreign bad actors that are using these kinds of times to plant these rumors in order to panic the American public. And nobody should question that, because you know that's happening here. As you say, they're sending out text messages and emails and all kinds of things, basically. All right, so one of the things they're starting to do now with the testing and rolling the testing out there is they expect a real spike here in the coronavirus cases. I'm seeing reports now, they expect up to maybe 70,000 coronavirus cases could be confirmed by the end of next week here. This may panic some people, but it's just, I think one of the big problems of this disease, Michael, is that there's a lot of people walking around with it and they have no idea because they're asymptomatic. And that's one of the real odd things about this coronavirus COVID-19 outbreak. There's no way to hold that information back as the testing happens here. You think the public can handle this? Because we're going to see some pretty big numbers. And by the way, that's going to continue to freak out the stock market and the rest of it that's gone crazy, huh?
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons that you had Dr. Francis Collins, who's one of the leaders on this coronavirus task force, come forward and offer this projection so that it's that the American people are not over-responding or overreacting or shocked by the fact that in this progression and then ultimately regression of this crisis, we're still sort of in the upward part of the slope, as they describe it. And the question really is only how high that'll go. We do know this ultimately is, this is not going to go on into perpetuity. Mm-hmm. It's going to come to an end, whether that's a matter of weeks, months, or slightly longer is what the question is. But mm-hmm. it will ultimately come to an end. So obviously, you make the most important point there, Malcolm, and that is that you have, if you're going to expand the test kits, into the millions, as this administration did, logically, as one of its first steps here, you're going to have more people that are going to get the testing. People that hadn't been tested were not being included in statistics. They're now going to get tested, and they're going to be included in statistics. And I think that's why some of these numbers, raw numbers, are going to go up. And it's also why they were artificially low before, because you had, even in the percentages, people that were, you know, obviously a more, you know, a death from this was included in the percentage death numbers, and individuals who were hospitalized were included, but those with the more mild forms of it that went away in days or a week or so were not even getting any testing or treatment for, and weren't included.
You know, one of the things the president has come under fire for is, you know, it's a real challenging, Michael, because this president is an optimist. He is, I mean, I got to tell you full out here, he is a cheerleader. He really is, always has been, for the American people. And I just think that's one of the beautiful things about this man, quite honestly. And yet they go after him every chance they can to, you know, call him inept and, you know, not able to. And they use that optimism and positivity in a very negative way. I pray that the American people can see through that. Do you think for the most part they are?
I get the sense that things are dividing pretty much the way they were before this crisis, in the sense that if you supported Trump, you're sympathetic with his predicament and plight. And if you didn't support Trump, he can't do anything right in your eyes in the way of the management of this crisis. I can only tell you factually, you know, and I only have a stake. That's my only stake in this, really, is the factual analysis of what's happening. I think all of the logical steps that you would take, and then some, have been taken by this administration. And there's really not a whole lot of room for criticism. In fact, that's sort of the twilight zone nature of the criticism, is that the very people that are stoking the fears are then asking the president, what do you say to those people that are scared? Well, you know, you're the guys who've been scaring them, as he, you know, sort of had with the NBC reporter in the dialogue in Friday's press conference.
That's right. You see, the southern border of Mexico has been halted, most traffic there. Of course, this happened in Canada. There was an announcement the other day with Trudeau. These are in unison with the leaders of these countries, so don't anybody freak out. That happened in Canada. It's now happened in Mexico. And you know, an interesting thing for people to realize, and it, you know, that's why that whole deal to replace NAFTA was so important with the USMCA. But how about these numbers here for you people? 1.6 billion. That's billion with a B now, in goods and services flow across the Mexico border. How about every single day? That is some numbers, Michael. Wow. I knew it was high, but I didn't know it was that high. So right now they're closing the border except to this non-essential, for all non-essential travel, but they're still trying to push the trade across. I think they'll be successful in this. Yeah.
I think so. And what's important about it is it's not, you know, an edict coming out of Washington, D.C. It was negotiated by Secretary Pompeo, the State Department, and, you know, Mexican officials. So it was done in a collaborative way, which I think, again, is here's an indication that we actually have a pretty good working relationship with Mexico, which probably is not something that's widely recognized given the reporting.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
But we've probably made more progress in our bilateral relationship with Mexico in this administration than any administration has in a few decades. So it's pretty significant. And it's also important for Mexico because, you know, they were doing pretty well with this crisis until they had, I think it was roughly 14 Mexican business executives. This included the CEO of Jose Cuervo, the tequila company, and the chairman of their stock exchange, and a bank executive who had traveled annually to Vail, Colorado, on a skiing trip, and had returned with exposure to this. And that's sort of being cited as not 100% of the cases, obviously, in Mexico, but a good number of them. So they're still faring better than we are, but they have an interest, obviously, in seeing that border secured. I think the bigger question that emerges out of this, however, is that for years, and I'm talking about before the Trump administration, many of us, me included, have been talking about the fact that public health was one of about a dozen reasons that border needed to be secured. Now, why is it that it took a crisis of this magnitude to all of a sudden get that done? And as I understand it, this is being done with a CDC directive, the Centers for Disease Control. Yeah. If they have the authoritative legal empower to actually enact that sort of security on the border, why would we just not do that into perpetuity? I mean, we know for a fact that there have been a vast increase in, say, tuberculosis cases in the United States as a result of the open border. Yeah. We know there's been all sorts of other infectious diseases that have been brought into the United States because of the fact that we've been unable/unwilling to control the border. Yeah, so I think what's revealing here is that apparently there is executive legal authority on the basis of public health to secure the border. And I'm, I saw in that announcement that illegal aliens who cross the border will be returned to their country of origin, which of course is not how this would have been handled before the coronavirus. Yeah. They would have been, given temporary housing and status here and afforded an asylum hearing. Now they're being sent back. Well, that's intriguing, I think, from a policy standpoint.
It is.
That simply shouldn't be the policy.
It is, and you don't hear as much from the political loudmouths about what you're speaking about right now, and that's because they know it's not politically expedient to be saying, let's just keep those borders open and let anybody come in with a pandemic going around. It does put another light on it. You're exactly right. Very interesting, and very interesting how the president handled this from day one of his administration with that board, with those borders. Pretty wild. Hey, last story here I want to cover with you, Michael, last couple of moments we have left here, is the this is kind of a very interesting story in that several U.S. senators are being talked about as selling lots of stock as the virus fears have started. In other words, they had information. They came out of various meetings and what have you and knew certain things were happening and then unloaded massive amounts of stock here. Pretty wild. And several of these are Republicans as well as a Democrat. What is your take on this?
Well, if you're like, for instance, I ran investor relations at a Fortune 1000 company for a period of time, so I'd be privy to what would be perceived to be insider information according to the SEC. During those periods where you possessed insider information on a company, but the public did not possess that insider information, you were precluded from any stock transactions, from buying or selling the stock. That's always made sense, and that's a policy that's been in place in the private sector. I believe all the way back to the 1930s when the first insider trading regulations were passed. They've never really expanded it comprehensively to Congress, and this is not the first time this has come up, because obviously members of Congress and members of the executive branch as well are privy to particularly regulatory information, and in this case, a public health crisis, that can have great sway on the direction of a market, and they can have access to that information long before the general public does, or sometimes the general public never does. So it seems to me that it points to an obvious conclusion that there's a loophole here. That why would you not want to close it? I mean, it's not that you're trying to create another disincentive for people to go into public life. We understand that, people have investments, but, they could be put into blind trusts, or they could have this similar governing regulation that required a quiet period for trading when they are privy to information that could have a impact on equities valuation.
There's obviously when you leave room there for the improprieties that can happen, and you're talking about some of our politicians, this isn't the first time that we're talking about these kinds of things up in Washington here. All that gray area needs to be removed, I think, and you need to clamp down on these kinds of things here. There's going to be a lot more, I think, come out to that story here. This is not the end of what you're going to hear about that. There's a lot more news ahead, people. Big thank you here to Michael Johns. Friends, stay right there. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, The time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, HealthyCell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit HealthyCell.com/sleep. That's Healthy, HealthyCell.com/sleep.
What most folks are wondering right now is what kind of a timeline are we looking at to have a vaccine for this thing? And there's some interesting information on this that I was surprised myself to find out. Let's talk about the vaccine timeline and what the potential is to turn this thing around for the world, really. Jim McKay is here. Jim is a political analyst, a commentator, radio producer here at America Out Loud. He has a 30-year background in global technology, telecommunications, and pharmaceuticals here. Jim, they've been racing to test this experimental coronavirus vaccine, and you probably heard that they are already have it up in Washington. Now, keep in mind, people, that the state of Washington now we're speaking about here. This was the hardest hit area at first, and it was because of a lot of the travel coming over from Asia prior to the president curbing the travel there and all that happening. You know, there's a timeline here that's in play. So they're started, and this is unprecedented, Jim, really, because there really hasn't been animal testing on this yet or any of that stuff going on. And so they're putting right this into humans. And, you know, I want to say to you this. I know we're in a hurry to get this vaccine, but you tell me with your background and understanding how this thing works, this could really backfire if we're not careful. And I'm talking about the side effects of these things can be, in some cases, more than the initial problem. Is that right or wrong?
Totally. I mean, you're looking at putting something new, a new chemistry into the human body. And even though in what they call the clinical trial stages that they do for most drugs, which can last 2 and 3 and 4 years in hundreds or even thousands of patients, everybody's different. Everybody has reactions. And if you ever read those tremendously long complications that you hear them on the TV, it's true. You could be putting something out that's worse than the cure.
Yeah. And, you know, there was a Yale University microbiologist says this is very unusual, to say the least. It reflects the urgency to develop vaccines to counter the COVID-19 pandemic. So there is this, hurry to get a vaccine. Now, Jim, here's what I did not know. And I wonder if you could shine some light on this, because when I did some research in some of the major health organizations and understanding how these vaccines come to market, I was quite surprised, actually, to find out that a traditional vaccine timeline is 15 to 20 years. And they go on to say, and this one gentleman here, Mark Feinberg, he's the president and CEO of the International AIDS Vaccine Initiative. He says that would not be acceptable here. And he said 15 to 20 years is a fairly normal. I have no idea it was that extensive of a timeline. I thought we were talking a couple, 3 years for any kind of a vaccine.
What he's talking about there is what they do is, in the normal progression of any drug, it takes somewhere between 36 and 45 months to work its way through the FDA morass of regulations and the way they move. They move like a snail.
You're talking 3 to 4 years, Jim, is what you just said, right?
Okay. What he's talking is they always do what they call after testing. They look at the information that's coming back clinically from doctors, from hospitals, and study this stuff for 10 or 15 years. Because in a test of only, say, 1,000 people, you still have this limited population. They want to know what the long-term complications are for any drug that goes out there. And that's typically normal. But the normal published timeline to the industry from the FDA is 45 months.
Wow. Okay. All right. So I can see that. Three. And now when they say, like, and Jim, when they say now like 18 months or two, and that's pushing it really hard, aggressive, isn't it?
Yeah. What it's doing is it's taking all the delay out of the process. The way it works is you do an initial submission of what your drug is going to be. Okay. FDA has 90 days to respond to it. And they take 89, 23 hours to respond. Mm-hmm. Then they send questions back to you. You have 30 days to respond. It goes on and on and on, this bureaucratic nonsense.
Right.
So what they're looking at doing is eliminating what the red tape is, as what President Trump has said. So it's all hands on deck, trying to expedite it to at least what we would typically call stage two clinical testing, which is in a couple hundred people,
right,
to prove that the drug, besides that doesn't kill people, which is stage one, that in stage two, that it actually works.
And Jim, real quick, what do you think about these malaria drugs they're talking about now? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, the drug has 30 to 50 years experience. It works. It doesn't cure malaria. Mm-hmm. That's a misconception. It does. Right. Right. What it does is it reduces the symptoms and reduces the complications that people have with malaria. 300 to 400 million doses of it distributed a year, especially in Africa.
So listen, my guess is we're in some unknown area here, because I've seen another story, by the way, McKay, that said that there were some drugs to fight Ebola, and they were looking, and those were having, they thought, potentially an impact here with the vaccine as well. So now you've got the malaria, you got the Ebola, you got all these kinds of things. In other words, these are drugs that are already out there that may potentially have an impact with this. Is that right?
That's right. Vaccines mutate continuously. I mean, every year we have a new flu vaccine, mm-hmm. and it's a year late because you had the epidemic with the flu in year one. Year two, you have the vaccine, and it's a continuous basis. None of these vaccines eliminate the viruses. They still exist globally and in all the populations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of just developing the antibodies. One of the groups in Seattle, there's another group in San Francisco working on a replacement for the antibodies. In other words, an injectable would have to be an injectable dose that would boost the antibodies in your body right off. You don't have to get the illness to do it.
Yeah, interesting. You know, there's a lot to learn on this topic right here that Jim and I are talking about right now, people, but you can kind of get the sense with all of these various treatments out there and how they're trying to, you know, process of elimination and go through these to see what works. But, you know, there's a process here. Now, the president, he has cut as much red tape as he can, which is what Jim McKay was just saying, to be able to, you know, fast track this, I guess would be the right word, out to the public here. Now, in the meantime, people here, what's really interesting, I want to talk to you about now is some of the economic conditions that are happening. You see, one of the big things right now is these agreements are coming forward from Washington, is this potential stimulus deal that they're trying to work over the weekend on. We're talking about a $1 trillion plus, and that's even a lot of money by Washington standards, I think you might agree. And they're trying to get it through the Senate now, and this is get Democrats and Republicans to come together to be able to put dollars into the hands here of folks. And I'll tell you what those dollars are in just a moment here. But let me bring on here now, here with us, Dennis Santiago is with us. Dennis is an American strategist here focusing on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. And also Ava Armstrong joins us. She's a political commentator, radio personality here, and a best-selling author. So here's the plan here. One of the plans is the Republican plan from the Senate was detailed, and it would include as much as, you've been hearing $1,000 a person, an adult maybe. Now they're saying maybe even up to $1,200 a person, $2,400 a couple, and an additional $500 for your children. But then part of the problem is, Dennis, is that, how do you qualify all that? Some politicians want to use tax forms from, like, I don't know, I've heard reports of 2018 or something. Other politicians don't want to use that because some people that need this don't file taxes. What's your take on this potential $1 trillion-plus stimulus thing to help out the public? Because this is obviously a government-mandated recession we're talking about here.
It is, but the alternative is that in 2 weeks, the next pay cycle takes place and nobody has any money, which directly impacts the ability of the lowest end of our society to continue to survive. And so what they're trying to do with this is find a way to stopgap that. So in answer to your question, I don't think tax rolls are necessarily the best way to qualify people for this, because the people that actually need it are the ones that are not necessarily just in the taxable economy, but these are also the people in the cash and carry world that are around, you know, the people that carry money in their pockets and are unbanked.
So how would we get to those people? How would we get to those people you just mentioned?
Well, I mean, there are ways to track these people. That, you know, they use payday outlets and stuff like that. So there is a way to administratively get to people that need this stuff. But the bottom line is, you know, we're on a 2-week timeline and it's very, very tight. The main problem that's going on with Congress right now is that Treasury Secretary Mnuchin and Nancy Pelosi have tried to negotiate something, and then the Democrats put a bunch of stuff in at the very end, which is hanging up the ability of the Senate to pass anything over to the president's desk. The Senate is basically acting as a stopgap to any stray stuff coming out of the House. And, you know, so McConnell and company are basically trying to basically say, no, we don't want to take anything to the president's desk that he isn't going to sign, because that's just going to really mess things up.
And Ava, to Dennis's point here, I mean, this is pretty typical Washington playbook here, where you take these things and you start to get all your pet projects in there and everything else. And we've seen that happen over the last couple of weeks. Still hard to fathom that they're trying to do that right now in the ninth in this. Well, this critical moment of time in trying to get this stimulus bill out there. First of all, how do you feel about this $1 trillion stimulus package? I mean, is this, I mean, what's your sense? Because I know you don't like a lot of government interference into these things. Are you supportive of that, back to that 2-week period Dennis just talked about and the crisis on hand? And how do we get this? I still don't understand with what Dennis is saying, how we get this to the people who need it if you don't use taxes.
Well, what you would do is you would give it to each individual state. It would be in the hands of each governor. And each governor knows that, you know, their own needs in their particular state. That's a no-brainer for me. I mean, that would be very easy to execute. The timeline is very, very tight. If these people don't get off this Christmas tree they're trying to load up, you know, it's ridiculous.
In other words, every hour they waste right now is like a days you're losing every hour. They need
exactly
to just, right, yeah,
exactly. And what's happening is the Democrats are trying not to let a crisis go to waste here, you know. And this is ridiculous. This is not the way to handle this. I don't really know what will happen. I think they'll try to pull something together. But Mnuchin is a very interesting man, and I've listened to him talk a lot about this. We've never been at this point in this country ever. This is a man-made disaster. We shot ourselves in the foot, okay?
Yeah.
And now we're trying to stop the bleeding. It's never happened. Even 9/11 didn't compare to this, okay? Nothing can compare to this when you look back in time.
Yeah, it is a man-made situation there. Let me bring on here next a guy, Ron Edwards here. I'd like to bring on to the program here. And you've heard Ron's voice before on the platform. He does those incredible 90-second spots here that you hear called the Edwards Notebook on the platform here. Ron is a weekly columnist here at America Out Loud. He's a talk show host. And again, those spots I just tell you about here. Ron, the political ramifications of this to get the stimulus through and all the things we're talking about now, and then trying to get it to the right people. You know the importance of that. Now, Ava just says, well, maybe they'll give it to the states and distribute it that way. But I'm not sure that's the answer either, because that, to me, would delay it more. You've got now another second round of hands in there to be able to get it to the people. I'm not sure that's the answer either. I still don't know how we're going to get this into the people's hands who need it the most. What do you think about this program they're trying to push forward?
Well, if you have good governors like the governor of Florida or the governor of Texas, sure, I think the process would be fine. But when you have governors like Governor Whitman of Michigan, people who who believe in not allowing a good crisis to go to waste, there would be holdups and there would be other complications created by Democrats who want to exacerbate the situation because they're out to harm the Trump administration so that more Democrats or whatever will be elected in November. So I agree with Ava on that count. But I'm also concerned about when you say stimulus packages. We've had two major ones. And the most recent one I remember was under the Obama administration. And there were supposed to be these shovel-ready jobs, and they were going to be passing this money down. Yeah. And we're still waiting for those road repairs and bridge repairs and all of that nature. So, but I think that you have to have, for example, a payroll cut. I think we should get rid of that so that when this, because this too shall end, my friends, and so that, the economy will more quickly rebound. Those are the kinds of the things that that need to be encased in this so-called stimulus package.
You're talking about a payroll tax cut, Ron?
Oh, yeah. I would say eliminate it anyway, because it's a waste anyway. That would allow $300 or so billion into the economy right away to circulate, so that the economy would more quickly rebound.
Yeah.
And the continuation of a regulation elimination. And so I agree with Ava, you know, these governors, you can't trust them to just pass the money on down anyway to the people. And many people would miss the money. What about all the homeless folks in Los Angeles?
That's what I'm looking
San
at.
San Francisco.
That's exactly it. Yeah, so, that's exactly it. Yeah. Jim, let me get Jim McKay here. Jim, I want you to respond to what Ron puts out there, specifically to the payroll tax cut as well, in a limit. What do you think about that idea, he says?
I think you have to be working to get payroll to cut the taxes on it. And right now, millions of people aren't working.
So yeah, but he's saying as a way more permanently to make this thing happen once we get to the other side of the road, he's saying.
Yeah, but if you get to the other side of the road, why is that necessary? I mean, payroll tax itself and the IRS itself has basically been challenged as being legal for a long time. But I don't believe we should change the entire system if it's not going to accomplish what we need to do in the short term. Mm-hmm. Most people right now, their biggest problem is going to be their mortgage, their utilities, ongoing credit card payments. And my feeling is just push all that out 90 days. Let the financial institutions deal with it. If you fall 30 days behind, they send you a notice. 60 days, they send you a threatening notice. Wall Street is, you know, the banks are making billions off of credit cards. Let them eat it for 90 days instead of throwing $3 trillion.
Well, the president came out, you've seen this past week, Jim, and he actually stopped any foreclosures or anything else happening for, I think, a couple of months or so. I mean, he's on it. He's trying to stop the pain factor for people. And anyways, what they're talking about here, Dennis, is to try to have a V-shaped recession. Everybody understand you're a V-shaped, meaning we're going to drop and plummet hard, which we're doing right this moment, as you mentioned moments ago, Dennis, with a two-week cycle that people are going to be hurting at the earliest here, versus a U-shape or an L-shape recession, which is going to be a much bigger problem here. President Trump has come out and said, well, the rebound on this thing is going to be significant because there'll be a lot of pent-up demand and that kind of a thing here. Kind of interesting way to look at this here economically, Dennis, huh?
Yes, it is. Now, I'm not really sure that it's possible to achieve a perfect V because, you know, that's the classic hockey stick solution that people talk about. And I've never really seen a hockey stick solution work in the world of finance. What I do believe you just have to understand is going to happen, because it's happening anyway, is that the gains of the last 3-4 years in the market have essentially been wiped out. But here's my perspective on this. The financial markets are like a battery, okay? You know, you charge them up in good times, and then you spend the energy in bad times to take care of things. What we're doing right now is we're spending the what we saved up for the rainy day, and we're having a rainy day. And on the other side of it, whether it'll come back up as a perfect V or if it'll come back a bit more U-shaped with a bit of work, that's to be seen. I do believe that the president has some work to do right now to figure out exactly how they're going to do that. I mean, they've dropped treasury rates down to such low levels. I don't know how much reserve they've got left inside the government system to push this back up.
Yeah. I love what you say there about the battery. It's a great analogy for people to grab onto and understanding. And Jim, it's interesting because we were economically at a terrific point and probably, I mean, just think, Jim, had this happened when we were in the midst of a very bad, if we were in a recession, or, well, back to where, you know, in the early Obama era and coming out of Bush 43 and then 44, if it had happened then, And just think of the pandemic that swept the world at that moment. I mean, it would be, we'd be talking about a severe, severe depression, McKay, in levels we'd never seen before, huh?
Absolutely. I think we were in a very good position to absorb a lot of impact. I mean, people, you know, they're upset. They've lost half of their investments by now. Mm-hmm. But the other part about the recovery on this, it's going to be a matter of confidence of people being able to get out, go That's out it. And get out, worry. Cruise ships, airlines, transportation in general, amusement, it's all going to take, it's not going to come back in 3 weeks.
You think a V-shaped recession is possible, yeah?
It's going to be kind of a flatter up slope. I don't think it's going to be, you know, 6 weeks and everything's back to, you know, normal, pre-virus normal. It's going to take some time.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, it's, I got to tell you, people, for me personally, I can't imagine V-shape. Sure. I love the concept. Like, but as McKay says, it may not be that easy to pull that off. And you heard Santiago said the same thing, but here's the thing. I know for me personally, I'm not ready to jump on a cruise ship anytime soon. I got to tell you that, even if the rates are free. I don't know. There's something about that being, what I'm saying is there's going to be some damage from this, some damage control. It's going to take a long time to come back from this pandemic. You know, I was having a conversation with someone just yesterday about, imagine what it was like back in 1918 when they had that pandemic and the Spanish flu swept the world and millions were dying from that pandemic. But think about, you know, that in relationship to today. They didn't have communications, they didn't have television, they didn't have cell phones, they didn't have the internet, they didn't have any of that. So then you think, well, how do they get information out there? Well, a lot of times that's by hook or by crook. It happens when it happens, when it hits your doorstep. And that, hence, is why you have the kinds of numbers. So in many ways, we are blessed today that we're in the year 2020 and we have these sorts of communications tools available to us. If you think about it in those terms, that's a positive thing. That's like knowing that the storm is coming and at least knowing to, you know, hold down and hunker down as the storm passes. It's kind of an interesting way to look at things, people, I think, at this moment of time, you know. One of the other interesting things I think you'll agree we've been sort of tarnished with is this mode of toilet paper, which is far stretches the mind here of why people thought they needed a, you know, 100-year supply of toilet paper. I do not know. Of course, the President Trump came out and said, stop the hoarding. For those of you out there that are buying 3 and 5 times of everything you need, shame on you. Because you're not leaving anything there for the next person to buy. And that goes with meats and other things that are important out there, not just toilet paper. But I got to share a funny story with you here on the toilet paper thing. So as the toilet paper's flying off the shelves here and people just can't get enough of this stuff, there was a North Carolina truck driver, by the way, that caused a stir when he was pulled over, get a load of this now, for hauling 18,000 pounds of toilet paper, you guessed it. And it was in a stolen trailer. And this was in North Carolina, as I say, Guilford County. So he was spotted, the driver, with this 18-wheeler, and they pulled, the authorities pulled him over. And evidently, the paper in the truck was legit, and trying to get to the place it was going to was legit, but they don't know how the driver got there. They're not releasing his name yet. And no arrests have been made yet, but they're not quite sure how this happened and how he was in the truck and the stolen truck, by the way, with 18,000 pounds of toilet paper. I got to tell you what, man, that's a story for the times here. And I'm just looking for a roll or two, actually. Don't need 18,000 pounds, but anyways, here. Well, listen, let me take a moment here and thank you again for being part of the journey here always at Viewpoint this Sunday here. We'll continue on a moment here and talk a little bit more about all the headlines here. But let me also remind you that there's a lot going on back at the platform, at AmericaOutLoud.com. We have assembled there some of the most awesome people around the globe, and you'll meet one of those right next as IQ Al Razzulli will join us in a moment here and talking about one of his recent pieces as well. But it's interesting when you go there, if you want to be informed, the columns, the blogs, the level of information there that is pointed out to me every day cannot be missed, as well as all of the talk shows, and that all do go to podcast as well, by the way. Now, these broadcasts you can hear on the apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. So whatever's convenient for you, just look up America Out Loud Talk Radio. And those links, by the way, are conveniently on the front page. voiceofamericaoutloud.com. So get all that there, people. And again, thank you for helping us push the word out there. We are a grassroots movement here of people from around the globe who passionately care about humanity, number one, and two, the plight of so many. And, you know, what do we do next? How do we make this thing happen, really? You know, so anyway, let's continue on here with Viewpoint here. And I want to bring on the program now, IQ Al Razzulli joins us here. For those of you who follow IQ on the platform, you probably know that he's exiled from Iraq. He's an Arabic speaker, a scholar, and author. Some of the most interesting write-ins, I think, you'll find. And his pieces always do so well. Because IQ, as you will hear in a moment, he speaks his level of truth. Well, what we call the out loud truth, friends. Give us a sense, if you will, of your being in Europe there. What's the sense out there on the street? And how do you feel about this? And how are people there dealing with it economically, IQ?
Well, personally, I think it was overdone. What the Western world has done with this was overdone. What I mean is they went overboard to take care of what's supposed to be the pandemic. 11,000 people out of 8.5 billion people, only 11,000 people are dead. Most of them are from China, Italy, and Iran. And yet, the whole of American civilization or state of United States of America is collapsing economically, mm-hmm. as if it's the end of the world. I don't believe it's the end of the world. The media are the most guilty of all, whether they are in America, Western Europe, or anywhere else. They are the ones who literally, they never let any opportunity to cause chaos or panic to go to waste. And they've done it. It is they who single-handedly created anxiety buying of food and essentials, as well as panic selling on the stock market. Malcolm, behind the mask of civilized society lurks the selfish, savage human being that is biologically programmed for survival purposes. This is why you found people carrying 20 bundles of 30 or 40 rolls of toilet. I mean, it's insane. Thank God in England at the moment, where I am, there is no such panic buying.
You know, IQ, if I'm in the store and I see an older lady trying to grab the last roll of toilet paper, I give it to her because basically I use the New York Times and the Washington Post anyways to wipe my backside, brother.
Absolutely correct. Honestly, you know, they are ruthless. They are real criminals. Even when they talk to the United States president, the reporters, good God, under my rule, I would have done Saddam Hussein rule on him.
Yeah,
I would have executed him. No, I'm not kidding with you. America is safe. Only, 100 people died in America so far?
Yeah.
How many? 150?
Yeah, a couple hundred, whatever it is. Let me most ask you this from- here. I know more people died from mosquito bites on Nevada Avenue. I mean, I get it. We've had all kinds of scenarios. Well, let me go down this road with you now. Did President Trump give in to pressure because all the people around him were pushing him to take the extraordinary steps he took? Is that what happened, or what happened? How did he do this? Why?
Yes, I agree with you. Yes.
Okay.
He was optimistic.
Right.
But they would have crucified him anyway.
Exactly.
The left would have crucified him. You see, no matter what he would have done,
right,
they would have crucified him. Yeah. What are they trying to do? They're trying to put in the $1 trillion items that will save them, not to save the American public.
Interesting.
To do with abortion, to do with things which Trump is against.
Right.
They are criminals.
Yeah,
I've always said they are criminals. I cannot change my mind.
You see, people should, and you hear IQ there, people, as I said to you, and you should not lose sight of the fact that this whole story about unity, as I discussed on Voice of a Nation the other day, is really nothing but a bunch of rubbish. And I will tell you that right now, because there is no unity here. It's not, what you're saying, IQ, is those with their agendas, their crooked agendas, they don't change in times like this. These kinds of people double down, don't they?
Absolutely, and they're doing it. They're not doing it for the American people. Trump is doing it. Look, I'm an outsider looking in.
Yeah.
I'm not a Republican. I'm not an American citizen. I shall be, by the way.
When I become, you're going to become an American citizen?
I'm going to. I apply for my green card. I will see you. Go this September, God willing.
Wow. I will be there with the microphone and the camera when we do that, buddy, at the place there. So, yeah, that's fascinating there. All right, let me bring in a couple of others here to widen this conversation here, because I want to ask you this here. Now, IQ, you stay right there, and let me bring in here Ava Armstrong. You hear IQ there. So just listen to this now. What would happen if President Trump did not play this out under the pressure that, as IQ just stated, that he was under, and he succumbed to the powers to be? What if he did not do that and he played it out and said, you know, I'm not going to buckle to this? What would have happened? What would that scenario have looked like?
Well, I personally think it would have been brilliant, because I'm wondering, why didn't we quarantine those people that we knew would be vulnerable? Why are we quarantining everybody in the United States? Everyone that produces something, that, you know, creates something, that employs people. Why did we shut the entire country down?
So in other words, you're saying if we had put out an announcement that said, if you have underlying conditions, or you are, you know, you've had a past history of something, and or you're very elderly, although we still don't know all the facts about this, Ava. There's reports now that this is targeting younger people than what they thought. So I don't know. There's a lot of gray area there. Do we really know who those are that are at risk here? I don't know if we really know that.
I think President Trump's biggest flaw right now is listening to all those people around him,
wow,
these so-called experts. Yeah. Okay. We did not need to shut this entire country down. This could have been handled differently.
So you think we should have went full steam ahead? IQ, you think the same thing. You're hearing Ava there. IQ, you believe we should have went full steam ahead and not buckled to the pressure?
Yes, she's absolutely correct. All we would have had to do, anybody over the age, let's say 65, to be quarantined. Self-quarantine, okay?
Yeah.
Yep.
For the national good, for the whole of America. Not quarantine everybody else. Of course, it will affect young people.
Right.
If they're so stupid as to go and congregate on the beaches. Yes.
Right.
You attack them.
Ron, I want to bring you on and just give me your quick thoughts. We went too far here. The president should not have succumbed or buckled to the pressure. What do you say about that, sir?
Both Ava and IQ rubber stamp what I have been saying from the beginning of this, and I, please forgive me, but this stupid situation. I thought that the president initially was doing the right thing. His heart was in the right place, and his heart's still in the right place. But I thought too that he allowed himself to be sort of mentally taken over by those so-called experts who do not have our nation's best interest at heart, and they know this. And like the gentleman said, he would be attacked no matter what he did. If he walked on water, they would say he couldn't swim. So, I mean, it's just the way it goes. And so, Ava and IQ, you both are 100% correct.
What Rod is saying, I love that. Even Jesus Christ would not be safe under these extraordinary circumstances, is what Rod is saying. You got to love it here. Jim, tell me, you agree with that or you disagree with that? Do I have anybody here that disagrees with that? Go ahead, Jim.
No, I agree with it. If you compare the number of people dying from this, and even the reported cases, compared to the regular flu, I mean, flu's been around for, 30 years? Have we solved it? No. We just kind of ignore 30,000, 70,000 people dying a year.
You tell me your thoughts, Dennis, on this here. Do you agree with, you've been hearing a lot of strong comments here. Potentially, Donald Trump, again, succumbed to the pressure, buckled with those around him, those advisors, those people that were telling him that he had to take these extraordinary steps. What are your thoughts to that?
My thought on this is that while extraordinary steps are a tool that could be used, I think it was used prematurely. The numbers do not support at this point in time going to the complete lockdowns that we are seeing on the coasts of this country. The problem that I think is happening is that it's not the White House doesn't have full control over what happens over the rest of the country. The governors have control over what happens in their areas, and the governors are panicking. And their experts are not nearly as good as the experts that the federal government is relying on. The federal government has been kind of holding back, but the state governments have basically just gone all out. They do not understand what's going on the ground in their areas. We don't have any testing that tells us how far this virus has already progressed through society. And they're basically, I mean, you know, Gavin Newsom is saying that 25 million people in California are going to get sick with this thing in 8 weeks. There have been like,
well, they're making some extreme projections is what they're doing. Yeah, they are.
At the moment, there are like 1,200 confirmed cases in the state, right? So like they're way off on their projections here.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Dennis, I am actually very surprised right now, and but pleasantly surprised, I guess, in a way here, because I have also felt, I guess, that potentially we're going too far. Now, I'm trying to have an open ear to the experts and the people who have it, but as IQ has pointed out and many others here, is that, you know, you can't trust these people. And as I talked about the other day here, you know, everybody has an agenda here. And a lot of, and when you look historically at the past many years of what they wanted to accomplish here in the country, it doesn't leave a lot left to the imagination, people, with what their ultimate goal is. So that really leaves us a little cautionary here. But I'm surprised because everybody on this program today, on this broadcast, believes that the president has gone too far and that this coast-to-coast lockdown in the country is just an extreme measure with this, again, mandated recession. And because economically, that's a virus in itself. People, when you have the sort of thing like Dennis says that people are running out of money and there's nothing left and you've got these kinds of problems, then that's a virus in itself that will kill a lot of people. Let's be clear here, which was to Ava's point earlier, there had to be another way to do this with those most impacted and all of that. Interesting times. IQ, let me bring you back in here and talk to you on this, to that article you have up that I want to encourage folks to read, Democrats and Republicans Undermining U.S. Security. You talk about China a lot in that piece, that article, but you also talk about China. Give us the cliff notes of what the message is from that article, please.
I accuse in my article the leftists and liberal Democrats and some Republicans because for years, for decades, they allowed American industries to be relocated to China because China has cheap labor. In the meantime, they have undermined the security of the United States of America because many of the earth-type minerals are in America, and there are many of them in the United States of America. But in China, the labor is so low, it is easier for them or cheaper for them to manufacture in China and bring it to America. So causing the United States of America to depend on China. And we have the proof now. This coronavirus has proved something which nobody was thinking about. Right. How dependent, how entirely dependent the West and most of the world is on China.
IQ, that's lesson number one out of all of this, right? I mean, that's lesson learned right there, as you say. I mean, if they don't learn that lesson, IQ, they're not going to learn anything.
Well, I hope they will, because what Donald Trump was trying to do from day one when he became president, he said, I want to bring back American industry to the United States of America. It should continue. They should really relocate, because they are literally, who made China? America made China.
That's right.
The trillions of dollars that the Americans invested in China made China a superpower.
Think about what IQ just said right there. That's an article you should write ahead. But what you just said right there, that is so key. People, think about that, please. Just a moment here. But if you take a look at our policies over the last 35 years through the Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama administrations and the havoc that they have wreaked on this nation, the rise of China can be who can be held accountable is our political leaders in this country. That is a very big statement to make, and IQ puts it out there really well, and he's spot on. Friends, I can't plead with you enough to be on the front lines here and push the spirit of America out there. They may be challenging times, but these are also times where the opportunities do come forth, and they will happen here. We will get to the other side of this. Just what kind of a world do we want on the other side of this? And what kind of an America do we want? Think about that, please. Thank you, friends, as always, for being part of the journey here. It's time to get involved and get loud.